A very good morning, Namibia. Thank you. That's Mr. David. Thank you for handing over the mic to this part of the world, to this part of the world. And we're coming to you live from the Ondangwa studio. Good morning. It's a Monday morning. It's the 1st of June. We are right in the middle of the year. Right in the middle of the year. So halfway already there. Halfway. And it's amazing. It's amazing when you think of it. It was just few months. It was just a few months. It was just running. Now we're talking about, you know, half of the year already is gone. And what have you achieved so far? What have you achieved so far? Have you achieved any of your resolutions that you have at the beginning of the year? So the year is going. The year is going. So it's a time. It's about time you take the shoes off. So good morning. Good morning and welcome. It's a Monday morning. It's also the beginning of a school. It's also school have started today. So yeah, make sure that there are so plenty. There are so plenty of children on the road. So make sure that you drive safely. You are cautious in your when you are on the road. Yeah, there are many pedestrians, children going to schools. You know, let's take a little bit of let's be a little bit cautious and also driving safely as we bring the small one to the schools. All right, and what also happened? Oh, Mamma Mia, Santa Maria. I remember one of my Italian friend who every time when they are really, really, you know, amazed or something, they would say, Oh, Mamma Mia, Santa Maria. All right. So, okay, what happened over the weekend? This is something that I cannot really let it go. And this one I cannot let it go. Okay, let's also, you know, congratulate Arsenal football for coming the run up. for coming run up at the Champions League final. So, well, they couldn't make it. There was a lot of noise from the Arsenal fan. Really a lot of noise. And that's why we need to talk about this because, you know, they were really right on our necks all the time. So, okay. So they could make, there's a league for the big guys, man. There's a league for the big guys. And the amazing thing is this. Okay. The funny thing is this, you know. The previous final, I thought that that was the worst final I ever watched, you know, where, you know, PSG, you know, demolished, what was it? Inter Milan? Was it Inter Milan or Milan? And so 5-0, you know. And this one honestly was the worstest. Seriously was the worstest. It was boring, you know, boring in the way that, you know, Arsenal never allowed actually PSG to play. There was only one game. There was only one team that actually came to play. And that was PSG. And Arsenal, they just came to defend. They didn't offer anything. 25% of possession. That was really, really, really one of the worst, you know, worst final, Champions final really to watch. It was boring. Honestly boring. It's something that it would disappear quickly in our memories. Yeah. But well, next time, man, next time, Gunners next time. All right. So as I said, those are for the big boys. Yeah. Those are a league for the big boys. Okay. So you still have time. You still have years to go. Okay. All right. So, okay. Let's come back to planet Earth. Okay. So let's come back to, I just wanted to gloat a little bit, okay, because it has been, you know, right in my face from some of my family members, from some of the supporters and all that kind of things, okay? All right, so good morning and welcome to Eagle FM, and this is Unpacking the Day. My name is Michael Chevalier. And this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business headlines, economic headlines, and political headlines. And every weekday, we cut through the noise. We cut through the noise. So we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, you know, the trends and the numbers that are actually making headlines. So we keep it clear. And always, what we do here, we ask questions. We ask questions that matter and giving you the fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segment don't necessarily reflect of those Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying, spark a meaningful conversation for you so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your space. This is your platform to unpack the the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So welcome. So today is Monday the 1st, the 1st of June. Our time is about 8 minutes past the hour of 8. So, and we will be here. I will be here until the time, until 10 o'clock, when we will be handing over to Tutale France for Kutha Mosha or Tatenaluvanda for Kufa Mosha around 10 o'clock. Make sure that you are, you know, you tune in for that program as well. All right. As usual, we go back into time. We go back into time. Today is the 1st of June. So good morning, Africa. So we look at what happened on this day in Africa. So good morning, Africa. And here, good morning. Today we're looking at, today's the 1st of June. And we are looking back at the major event that shaped the continent on this day. And here is what happened on this day in Africa. So we start with some major milestone. On this day in 1963, Kenya took a giant step toward freedom. And it was on June the 1st that the country officially gained internal self-rule. Now, internal self-rule. So this day is celebrated as a Madaraka Day in Kenya. A name actually taken from Swahili word for authority. So it marked the end of direct British colonial administration. And as you know, Jomo Kenyatta became the country's first prime minister, setting the stage for full independence just 1 year later. And staying with history, on this day in 1979, a significant change happened in what was then known as Rhodesia. For 90 years, the country had been under white minority rule. 90 years. But on June the 1st, the first black-led government actually took power. Now, Bishop Abel Mazorewa was sworn in as a prime minister. So, but, on June the 1st, okay, Bishop Mazorewa was actually sworn in as a prime minister, although the country was not yet really fully recognized internationally. This moment ended the 9 decades of exclusive white rule. 90 years. So it was a crucial step. This was a crucial step toward the country's becoming the independent nation of Zimbabwe in 1980. Jumping forward to 1994, South Africa made a return to the world stage. Following the end of apartheid and the election of Nelson Mandela, the country officially rejoined the Commonwealth of Nations on this day. So it was a very powerful symbol. It was a very powerful symbol showing that South Africa was back in the international community after years of isolation. And on a sober note, I think on a more sober note in South Africa, on this day in 2002, the cricket world was shocked by the death of Hansie Cronje. I think if you remember, this was he was the former South African cricket captain. So the former South African cricket captain actually died in a plane crash in the Outeniko Mountains. And he was remembered, you know, Hans Cronje was remembered as one of the country's most successful captain in cricket. Although his reputation had been damaged by a match fixing scandal, which happened actually before his death. And finally, looking at the economic history, on this day in 1964, the Yaounde Convention came into force. It came into force. This was an important agreement signed in Cameroon that strengthened economic ties between the European Community and 18 newly independent African nations. So that's all for today's look at history. And thank you for listening to On This Day in Africa. All right, our time is about 13 minutes past the hour of 8, and a very good morning, and thanks for joining us at this point. Thanks for joining us here on Unpacking the Day, and you are tuned into Eagle FM. And it is our pleasure to be in your company, and thanks for choosing Eagle FM to be in your company. So today it's Monday, June the 1st. So what is our thought for the day? So here is thought you can carry with you today. Now, you know the proverb, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. You know, you can lead a horse to water, but you cannot make it drink. Now, in life, we often want the best for the people around us. We give advice, open doors for them, share opportunities, and really try to guide others in the right direction. Now, but there comes a point where the choice is no longer ours. The choice is no longer yours. You can show someone the way, but you cannot walk the journey for them. So you can offer knowledge, support, encouragement, but they must decide whether to use it. Now, that's the wisdom behind this old proverb. So today, do your part, okay? Today, do your part, share what you know, lend a helping hand, and be a positive influence. But remember that growth happens when people choose it for themselves. And that's the wisdom behind this old proverb. So, and that's your thought for the day on Unpacking the Day. So, good morning. If you're just joining us, good morning. You just right on time. Well, you're late a little bit, but doesn't matter. You're on time. There's still a lot that you miss, of course, the thought for the day, but you're on time. Okay. All right. So what is on our menu this morning? We have actually quite a lot of interesting, you know, topic to discuss. A very, very, very important, crucial topic to discuss. You know, the Namibia's housing crisis. Okay. The Namibia housing crisis. So last week, there was a headline about 70% of a Namibian population cannot afford a formal housing. Okay. There was that headline last week. So this Namibia housing crisis, when you look deeply into it, is not from the seminar that actually held. There came out a few things. Okay. when you look at that, it's not purely a market failure. So when you look at the housing crisis, it's not purely a market failure, but a structural issue rooted in three things. And these are the things that we're going to look into there. These are the things that we are going to unpack this morning. So it's a structural issue rooted in three things. One, colonial land patterns that has never been readdressed or reformed. You know, colonial land patterns. So that's one. The other one is financialization, you know, of housing, financialization. And also, and very important one, actually, a wage regime that excludes the majority of the citizen from owning home, you know, from home ownership. So those are the issues that we're going to look at. Okay. So, and we're going to look at, we will have an angle that we're looking at. We're not just looking at the house crisis as we normally do, but please join me in looking at some of this aspect. All right. So, very important. Okay. And the other area, the other study, if we still have time, the other study that we can look at is that they say in a very landmark move towards, towards regional industrialization and energy independence. Now, Botswana and Namibia have united to launch a $4 billion oil refinery project. Well, it's happening at last. Okay. At least there's an agreement, you know. So it's happening at last. I was very happy actually to hear that because this is what we want. We want to hear some of the agreement that say this is what we're going to do. Okay. A $4 billion oil refinery project. And this is actually designed, you know, the project is actually designed to, of course, to reduce Africa's reliance on imported fuel. And also drive the sustainable economy transformation. I think this is, as I said, I'm excited because these are the projects that really, really, if it happened, would be very transformative to our economy, to both our country's economy. So that's another thing that we're going to look at. Let's get into it a little bit, okay? We have been on this road in Africa before, and let's look at what our challenges that could be that could be facing that project. One of them, $4 billion, that's not even close to our development budget. Where are we going to get the money? So that's the first question I have actually right in my mind. So let's look at that as well. So as you can see, fully packed. Really looking at certain things that are very important, that are relevant to our economy. So let's discuss that, and we'll do that just after this.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Yeah, that's right. That's your number one talk radio station. And please do follow our updates, regular updates on an hourly basis, you know, and you can only do that by following us. Follow Eagle FM and also The Villager. Follow Eagle FM and The Villager on our social platform, on X, on LinkedIn, on Instagram, on Facebook, on WhatsApp channels, all that. So, and engage with us. Do engage with us and these on these social media platforms, and make sure you leave a like, you leave a comment. You know, so those love signs and then up, you know, that sign that's thumbs up and all that. Make sure that you participate and you become part of that. And leave a comment as well. We love to have your, give us feedback as well in what we do. We do this for you, and we want to have your feedback as well. And today is Monday, And if you're really looking for latest business and economic news, you know where to go? Get yourself a free copy of The Villager. Get yourself a free copy of The Villager. Do you know what you need to do? If this is the first time you're actually hearing this, it's very, 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 very simple, my dear. So by simply what you need to do is just, you know, sending a WhatsApp message. That's all what you need to do. Send a WhatsApp message with your name and email to 081-200-4144. Okay? That's all what you need to do. So, and voila. So once you do that, you know, you are subscribed and we will be sending you a free copy on every Monday, Tuesday, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So, because The Village is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And it is for free. Mahala. Eh? It's mahala. All right? So, all right. So, welcome. If you just, you know, coming from your, you know, making a cup of tea, relax, let's, you know, pull a chair if you're in the office and let's do this. Wherever you are, you're on the road, let's do this together. All right. Now, welcome back to Unpacking the Day. And of course, I'm your host, the Big Mike. So this morning we are talking about housing, or rather the lack of it. Okay. Let's be a little bit specific. We are talking about the lack of housing. So, now, here's the number that should shock you, okay? And I don't know, I think when you hear these headlines we talked about this. I think there was a story, we covered this already, but I just want to cover certain things. On the radar, I think last week, on the radar, we covered, you know, I think France. Yeah, it was France. I think I remember hearing, you know, discussing this, also this issue, housing issue as well. This is something that will never get out of fashion, if you like, because this is our daily problems. Eh? It will never get out of fashion. Housing, it will never get out of fashion. It's a problem that will never go away, because that's a problem that we experience almost every day. So majority of people, that's what we're talking about, 70%, 7 out of 10 Namibians cannot afford affordable housing. So that should be an issue that really should be, you know, in a public discussions. Okay? It should be. So, as I said, that's a number that actually shock you, should be shocking you. 7 out of 10 Namibians cannot afford formal housing. What, not because they are lazy or something, or not because they do not work hard enough or something like that. No, that's not the case. Yeah? But because, and this is very important, and I want you to underline that, and that's what we're going to look at, okay? That's what we focus on this unpacking. Okay, so as I said, not because we are not working hard enough, but because the system was never built for them in the first place. Yeah? These people that we're talking about, the number of people that we're talking about that fall in that 70%, the system was never built for them in the very first place. 70% of people in this country are locked out of the most basic human need, the roof over their head. 70%. 70%. But what, the number alone doesn't tell the story. Okay? That number alone doesn't tell the story. So this morning, what we're going to do, we are going to unpack those numbers. As I always tell you, numbers don't lie. Okay? Numbers don't lie. There are two things that always do. You should always do. Okay? Numbers don't lie. And, you know, follow the money. Those are the two things. And mostly what I do here, those are my really foundation. Look at the numbers and follow the money. Okay? So what we're going to look at, we are going to trace them back now to where they come from. Okay? Where these numbers coming from? And we are going to ask the question that too few people actually are willing to ask. So that's what we're going to do. So, and I want you to do that with me. Okay? All right. I'm going to divide this into a number of stories. Okay? We're looking at really different stories. This is coming from what we... That's coming from stories that we heard. It's covered in the news, in a number of newspapers, actually. So now, let's talk about now the million-dollar roof. Okay? So I'm going to paint you a picture for you. I'm going to be painting a picture for you. In 2000, a house in Windhoek cost around 200,000 Namibian dollar. Okay? That wasn't cheap. It wasn't cheap at that time. But let's say, for example, you have a working family with two incomes. That was actually within the reach. Okay? I think that was within reach. That's in 2000. Now, fast forward to 2010. That same house, 780,000. 780,000 and 83,000. And today, between 1.3 and 1.4 million. All right? A standard house in Namibia now, if you are in Windhoek, for example, standard house in Windhoek, in Namibia, or maybe in Wavish Bay, now costs roughly seven times what it cost 25 years ago. Now, what I want you to understand here, and that this is the angle that I want to bring in this discussion, is that housing crisis is actually wage crisis. You know, it's actually a wage crisis. Now, ask yourself this, ne? Ask yourself this. Has your salary, now think of your salary, has your salary gone up seven times in the last 25 years? Well, if you have been working for 25 years, let's say, for example, you've been working for 25 years, have your salary gone up seven times in the last 25 years? Do you understand what I said? Housing crisis, a wage salary, it's a wage crisis. Now, has anyone's salaries in your family maybe gone up seven times? Or someone you know? Yeah? Now, the central bank own deputy director of policy research confirmed actually this figure at the seminar. When there was a seminar. So house prices have more than doubled just in the last decade and a half. We're going to come back on this issue.
Great news! Impact just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Impact? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back. So our time is about 8:30. It's about 8:30. Good morning. Now, so we're looking at, you know, 70% of Namibian populations, cannot afford formal housing. Okay? So now, the central bank, and I was just saying to you that the housing crisis is actually a wage crisis also. Okay? Because now the central bank own deputy director of policy research confirmed this figure at the seminar. All right? There was a seminar in Windhoek last week. Now, housing prices have more than doubled just in the last decade and a half. But it has been doubled, but the wages have never moved. Or moved, if it moved, it really moved on a snail pace. The wages never moved. So, here's what that gap looked like in real terms now. Let's give you now. I'm gonna give you now the what is this gap? The gap that has been, you know, the prices of houses has been just going up and up and up and up and up, and then while your salary remains stagnant, yeah? Or if it moved, it's really just moved on a snail pace, really snail pace, yeah? Not chameleon pace, but snail pace. Now I want to show you what that gap looks like now in real term. Okay, now to qualify, and follow me, so to qualify for a bond, now we're talking about the average home now is $1 million. Okay, now to qualify, just hold on a little bit, there's something I want to do quickly, and I'm coming back to you in a second. Okay, that's done. Now, to qualify for a bond on $1 million house, you need to earn at least 39,000. Okay? To qualify for $1 million house, you need to earn at least 39,000. $497 per month. Okay? This is now really to, I'm getting you now, the reality of you, if you are, for you to be able to qualify for that house. So what do you need? You actually need to earn at least $39,497 per month. That is the bare minimum. Okay. That's now the bare minimum. No deposit. Okay. No deposit. 20 year repayment period and interest rate at 11.5%. You understand? Okay, not deposit, 20 years repayment and interest rate at 11.5%. Now, here is the part that really hurts. Okay, here is now the part that really hurt. And I hope that, you know, I have some policymakers, bankers, whatever, listening as well. Now, by the time you finish paying off the bond, you will have actually paid $1.5 million in interest alone. I said 20 years repayment period, and the interest rate at 11.5%. So, by the time then you finish paying off the bond, you will have actually paid $1.5 million in interest alone. That's just interest alone. Now, the total cost, $2.5 million for $1 million house. $2.5 million for $1 million house. Banks, the bank makes more money off you. The banks make money off you, off your house, than you do. Now, ask yourself, who is this house? Now, the really question is now, who is this housing market actually serving? This housing market, who is actually serving? And that leads us now, let's get now to the second story. Now, story two. Okay. Now, let us talk about what Namibian actually earn. Let's now get us now to story two. We're talking about now to afford that average house. Eh? You have to have above 39,000. You have to earn about 39,000. Okay, let's get to story two. So, what Namibians actually earn? Maybe the majority of Namibians earn. Now, the latest labor statistic paint a picture that is nothing short of devastating. Nothing short of devastating. So, over 300,000 workers in this country. Follow me, please. Over 300,000 workers in this country earn less than 5,000 Namibian dollar per month. This is not my statistic. I'm not tiko fake coffee. Okay? I'm not just speaking from the back of my, you know, of my head. Over 300,000 workers in this country earn less than 5,000 Namibian dollar per month. 300 and 200, 302,000, 210 people go to work every day, putting in their hours, and take home less than $5,000. 300, 200, to 320,000, 302,000, 210 people. As I said, they go to work every day. And all they earn for their labor is less than $5,000. Okay, let's break it. This has been actually broken down. So let's break that down further. Okay? Nearly 98,000 workers earn $1,000 or less per month. Nearly 98,000 workers earn $1,000 or less per month. Another 88,000 take home between $1,000 and $2,000. 88,000 take home between $1,000 and $2,000. Close to 60,000 earn between $2,000 and $3,000. And another 56,000 sit between now 3,000 and 5,000. So these are not unemployed people. These are working Namibians. People who wake up every morning, catch that taxi, stand on their feet all day, and at the end of the month, they cannot even dream of a mortgage. They cannot dream of a mortgage. Now, listen to this. Only 2.6% of employed people in this country earn over $40,000 a month. Now, we're looking at that because you need 39,000 to afford an average home. You see? And only 2.6%. This is a crisis. Only 2.6% of employed people in this country earn over $40,000 a month. 2.6%. That is the tiny sliver of Namibians who can actually walk into a bank and qualify for a home loan. Yeah? That tiny, it's just a fraction. Yeah? And the rest, the rest, they're left to scramble. We are left to scramble in informal rental market. Yeah? Or they build a shacks in the informal settlement. Not because they want to. Because the formal market has no room for them. And consider this. Okay, let's bring this in. Let's bring this in also. Okay? This is from the, according to the, what is the data? According to the global cost of living data, I think it's it. Yeah, it's a cost of living data. It's something I covered at one point. According to the global cost of living data, okay? I think I got that right. So, a single person in Namibia needs more than $11,000 a month just to live comfortably, and that is excluding rent. So, even if you earn $5,000, you are already below the cost of living before you even think about housing. Eh? The wage crisis is the housing crisis. the wage crisis is the housing crisis. Okay? So how do we expect people to buy homes when their wages cannot even cover the basic survival? Their wages cannot even cover a basic survival. Now, how do we then expect them to buy a house? As I said, wage crisis is the housing crisis. All right? Okay, let's go to our third story. Okay? To our third story. So now, here some will say, well, that is just how the market actually works. I think they are right. That's how the market works, supply and demand, isn't it? Prices goes up. Eh? Prices goes up. That is capitalism. Eh? That's capitalism. But let us look a little closer at who actually benefit from this arrangement. Who actually is benefiting from this arrangement? Eh? Who? Now, we have less than, statistically, less than 10% of the working population. Get that? Less than 10% of the working population holds home loan totaling 45.1 billion Namibian dollar. Less than 10% of the working population hold homes loan. They hold homes loan, and that is totaling 45.1 billion Namibian dollar. That is a massive amount of debt concentrated in a very tiny fraction of the population. In a very tiny fraction of population, because they tell less than 10% of the working population. But here's what should really concern you, okay? This is what really should concern you. The non-performing mortgage loans, okay? The non-performing mortgage loan, do you know what that is? That is the money owed by Namibians who have already fallen behind on their payment. You know, that's non-performing mortgage loans. So currently stand at around $3 billion. $3 billion. So that's more than half of all non-performing loans in the country. Let me say this again. More than half of all the bad debt, you call it a bad debt, okay? So more than half of all the bad debt in Namibia comes from people who are failing to pay off their homes. Yeah? Do you understand? So even the people who did manage actually to get into the house marketing, who actually get into the housing market, are drowning. They are drowning. The banks lend them money at a higher interest rate, knowing full well that the margins are very thin. The margins are very thin. Knowing very full well that the margins are very thin. So, and now, those same bank are sitting on $3 billion of distressed mortgages. They are sitting on $3 billion of distressed mortgages. And this is not health housing market, my friend. That is not health housing market. That is a debt trap. That's a debt trap. That's a debt trap. And the researcher at the seminar made a critical point. They made a very critical point. Housing in Namibia has been financialized. You understand? Housing in Namibia has been, that's why I said it's a debt trap. Because housing in Namibia has been financialized. That means housing are no longer built primarily for people to live in. They are built as an investment vehicle. They are built as an investment vehicle. So land becomes a speculative asset. Private banks profit from higher prices and long-term debt. Eh? So property developer build for the top end. Eh? They build for the top end of the market. because that's where the returns are. That's where the returns are. And the result? Of course, housing market that works exactly as they designed. They work exactly as they designed, just not for you. Just not for the majority of Namibians. Just not for the majority of the Namibians. That's it. It's actually, as I said, the housing market works exactly as it designed. Not for you. Are you following? Now, if banks are making billion while the 3 billion in mortgage debt goes bad, who is really being served here? Who is really being served here? You have to have a financial understanding to be able to get some of the things that I'm talking about. Okay. Now, let's go to the fourth story, I think. Okay. Now, here is where we need actually to go a little bit deeper. Here's where we need to go a little bit deeper, because this crisis did not actually start yesterday. Okay? This hasn't started yesterday. It did not even start in 2000 when house prices began their climb. The root of this go all the way back to the colonial era. Okay? It goes back. It goes all the way back to the colonial era. Yeah? Now, under the colonial rule, if you remember, under the colonial rule, the best land in Namibia, the urban land, the commercial viable land, was taken from the majority and given to the minority. The urban land, the commercially viable land, as I said, that was actually taken from the majority and given to the minority. So we were doing the commemoration of the, not the commemoration, the remembrance, genocide remembrance. It's basically that. It's basically that. Towns were built to serve colonial interests. You know, towns were built actually to serve the colonial interests. Urban land was allocated along the racial lines. Black Namibians were pushed to outskirts. That's where we are. We were pushed to the outskirts, into location, into compound. Remember those people where that they were in compounds? With no claim. And when you are in those compounds, you have no claim to the land you are lived in. Okay? You are in the location and compound, and you have no claim to the land that you are lived in. So you see, this is actually coming from, you know, as I said, these were rooted. These are things that were rooted from the colonial era. Now, the thing is this now. The problem is this. And I want even the parliamentarian to listen to this. When the independence came in 1990, the political power changed hands. But the land patents largely stays the same. And I don't think any one of you disagree with that. The land patent largely stays the same. So what we are living with today is the direct legacy of that dispossession. It's a direct legacy of that dispossession. Urban land in Namibia is still concentrated in a very few hands. We still see that. Communal land in rural area remain underdeveloped. So, in the state, and I said, nobody can dispute this, and the state never rebuilt rural economies after colonialization. After apartheid, after whatever you call it, after colonialization, the state never rebuilt rural economies. People are forced. Now, this is why we have this problem. People are forced to migrate to cities because there is nothing for them in the rural areas. State never rebuilt rural economies. And that should have been our focus. And that's why we have a problem of migration, internal migration, to cities. One reason is because nothing for them, there's nothing for them in the rural areas. But when they arrive in the city, the other thing is that when they arrive in the city, then what happened? The land is already owned. Do you understand? When you arrive in the city, the land is already owned, already priced. If you have money, you can have land, but it's already priced and already out of reach. It's already out of reach of you. Do you remember? Do you remember the prices, the wages that we're talking about? I deliberately saw those and a number of people who are in that category for you to understand that even if, seriously, these are realistic things. I think we don't get into analyzing this too. We just take the rhetoric that anybody tells us and we jump and clap hands. You have to come to Unpacking the Day. You have to come to Eagle FM. And this is what's happened. Seriously, when now the people coming from the rural area arrive in the cities, the land is already owned. And it's very overpriced already. You will never afford it. Unless you are one of those, you are over the one, you know, and you are that 2%. You remember that 2%? That earn over 40,000 a month? Unless you are that part of that. And imagine the 70%. If you are in the 70%, forget it, my friend. Forget it. Stop even asking. We need to look at a different way of approaching this. It's out of your reach. It's out of your reach. So do you understand? So when a government official blame now, when we have now government official blaming the rapid urbanization, these are people who just don't understand. When they're blaming a rapid urbanization for housing crisis, they are telling a half. They are only telling half of the story. They are only telling half of the story. The urbanization is not the cause. That's only a symptom. In my mind, that's only a symptom. So people moved to city because rural economies were destroyed by colonial dispossession and never rebuilt. Take that note. People moved to the cities because rural economies were destroyed by colonial, you know, disposition. That's a fact. And the other fact is that our state never rebuilt that. They never rebuilt the rural economies. So, Namibia's economy pushes people toward urban centers. And someone actually said this, I read it somewhere, probably in the newspaper or something. He said this, the Namibian economy pushes people towards urban centers while at the same time refusing to house them. You understand? We push them to the urban centers, but we, at the same time, we are refusing to house them. And that is not a market failure. That's what I said at the beginning. That's not a market failure. That is a structural design that has never been corrected. It's a structural design that has never been corrected. We still actually, you know, as I talk about the dispossession, the colonial dispossession, that has never rebuilt. It's a structural design that has never been corrected. So, now, how can we solve a housing crisis without confronting the colonial land pattern that created it? That's the question. And that's a question for our lawmakers. Do they even go deeper on it, on these issues? Or are they just happy they are in the parliament? Some came in like, you know, slender, but now, they are heavyweight. How can we solve a housing crisis without confronting the colonial land patterns that created it? That's the question. And that's the question. That's your homework. That's where you need to go if we want really to solve this problem. There are colonial land patterns that hasn't changed. Now, let's go to story number five, the government now response. What is the government response? So what is the government doing about all this? What is the government doing about all this? Now, let's not go back too far. Let's just get to where we are now. The Sixth National Development Plan. The Sixth National Development Plan set out some target. All right? It set out some target. Built 55,000 houses. Look at it. Do you even look at it? As a citizen, do you even look at it? Built 55,000 houses. Built 55,000 houses. Service 50,000 plot. And reduce the informal settlement population. Reduce the informal settlement population from 28% to 14%. This is a dream. Sounds reasonable? It sounds reasonable until you look at actual numbers. And this is sometimes when I said, when people make up all these ambitions and this target, are there really people there that informing them what is the reality? I think Kwedi was saying something with David. I just can't remember what was it, but it's something he said in Oshawamba. But I thought I had it in my mind, but now it's gone. So now what I'm asking is that this sounds reasonable, isn't it? Now, but that's why I always said numbers don't lie until you look at actual numbers. So we're talking about the target that was set, 55,000 houses, service 50,000 plots, reduce now the informal settlement population from 28% to 14%. Now look at the number. Look at the actual numbers. Okay? The housing backlog in this country stand at what? It stand at 300,000 unit. 300,000 unit. The government's plan cover, when you look at the NDP 6, the government plan cover less than 20% of that need. Are you telling me? Now, just from that, I said people maybe don't, much of the politician, they don't know the numbers. Why would I say? I probably said they don't know the numbers. That's the only thing I can say because now, you look at that, the government plans covers less than 20% of that need. You know what that's like is? It's like you are trying to put out a forest fire with a bucket of water. Okay? You're trying to put out a forest fire with a bucket of water. Do you know what I mean? Well, it is not that... You know, the effort is meaningless. Okay? The effort is meaningless, but it's nowhere near the scale of the crisis. Nowhere near the scale of the crisis. But on top of that, when it comes to actual number, even as I said, the plan only cover less than 20% of the need. On a yearly basis, we don't even meet that 20% that we're talking about. We don't even meet what we need to meet in a year, what we need to plan in a year. So, as I said, that is nowhere near scale of the crisis. Not at all. Yeah? And there's a deeper problem. There's another even a deeper problem. Even the houses that are built under the government programs, they often remain there. Also, they also remain unaffordable. Eh? They also remain unaffordable. Eh? So service land is still actually sold at the market price. Service land is still sold at the market price. Public-private partnership produce home that average Namibia cannot afford. Eh? Let's get to the caller. We get at past nine now already. Very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Yes, that's me. How are you?
I'm fine, man. And yourself?
I'm all right. Sorry, we give you 1 hour. Done.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I realize. Yeah. I'm being a little bit passionate about this. It's really bothering me, you know.
True.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Mike.
And I'm sorry, man, for what happened to you. You know.
Yeah. Anyway, there was a penalty for us also, man. I didn't live for you also sometimes. Maybe they just want us PSG to make history, but we want us to make history, man. Hey,
you trapped yourself, man. You know, Arsenal is capable of beating PSG, but the way you approached the game, it was horrible.
No. It was a good tactic. Otherwise, we will lose. Yeah, PSG is not in our level, my friend. It's not a joke.
No. You have players that can score, man.
No. We cannot. Yeah. But our tactic, it was okay. Because remember one thing, this is one of the team which is only having youth. Yeah. And you can see how the boys overtaking him and the other guy, when they hit the crossbar.
Yeah.
You can see the guys are fast. One mistake you make, this is, you consider the goal. If you remember the game with the last time when they beat Inda 5-0.
Yeah,
my friend, yeah. It's not a joke. I thought we were supposed to reserve that one. The moment you attack PSG, remember that there's always a consequence.
Yeah, no. But at least the best team win. Actually, the best team win.
That's true. Yeah. They deserve it. You can see you cannot just work for the until to the final.
Yeah.
Without you are not because of lagging. Like, no way.
Yeah.
But anyway, at the least we make a history. We are the team with for the whole entire we never receive a goal. I mean, what? We never lose a game.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Because
that's
one was on the penalty. Yeah.
But almost it doesn't count, my friend.
next time I will come. Because we're still having our good spot also. We just have to replace there and there and there. Yeah, I think we'll be fine.
Yeah.
Okay, let us go to your topic. You know Mike, now?
Yeah.
I think we talked about this last time.
Yeah.
When it comes to Namibia, I mean that we are having this apartheid law when it comes to our banks.
Yeah.
Which is there and there. Now people, they will tell you when you are the other side of the table, you forget the other people you live in the other table, where there's no, nothing.
Yeah.
Because now people are telling, oh, we work hard like everybody.
Mm.
But you look at them that, is this how we call it, work hard? But,
you remind me of somebody there. You know,
yeah.
There was a graduation. When I went for South Africa, came back, there was a graduation that I attend.
Yeah.
And there was this one of the government, I don't know who was it, was talking about how these guys have all the degrees and whatever, and encourage people to go out there and look for and create jobs. You understand? But now, the funny thing, the person was next to me. Look at this one.
Yeah.
He's telling people to go and look out for a job, and he has been the praise that was
what
given.
He
have all these degrees and what, but he never went to go and look for a job. But he was actually looking for a job in the car. He wanted the
So I'm very good that they are funny. The way they make their speech sometimes, you're wondering, this guy is like he's telling people who don't think. How is this here?
So he has got this degree and degree and degree, and he never went and create jobs. Now he asking these people to go and create jobs.
To create a job. So, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. In Namibia, we do things the way we are around. Because look now, you are even talking about government housing, which are still up to now standing. Go to Chongqing and then you look, my friend.
Yeah.
We're still having those mess housing flats, which I think now some of them, they end up being sold by individual private. Mm. And they wonder how, if it is, why you have to sell the standing structure, which was built using government money, now you are selling to private.
Yeah.
Why you don't sell it to people, then the people are able to pay off, or municipalities themselves. City of Windhoek can take over that project.
That's exactly what I said. Even houses that are built by government programs are often, they are unaffordable.
Yeah? I'm telling you.
And the whole idea was actually, the whole idea, and sometimes we contradict ourselves. The whole idea is actually to make housing available to ordinary Namibians. But we create, there's a design, there's a structural,
telling you, apartheid way, and still continuing with our government.
Yeah.
This is what our government has become second colonizer of our people. I'm telling you, it's not a joke. I can testify for that. Nobody will tell me that, you know, Swapo is the one who liberated this country. Now we have land. Then you tell me how many people on Namibian people are enjoying the land today. Even though they are following us to the north. You remember the other time when I'm complaining, you said, no, we cannot tell me you put up a Congo to become a town where people used to graze and watch, and they have a farm. And now, remember that now they are moving you out, giving you that 200,000 alone. And now that household used to have maybe 30 people.
Yeah.
Now they start selling those plots individually, one by one, where your people used to live in the house cannot even afford those plots or services which were needed by municipality. It's what I'm saying, guys, we cannot have a divided land. Either we come commercial or we come communal.
Mm.
So, we can have a title deed, as our individually. Yeah. But this title deed, not to government, must be through our traditional authority. And the scared parties that, politicians, they don't want that because they are scared. Once you give a traditional authority in charge of title deed, they will lose power. And indeed, they will not tell us more when it comes to, like, you can go to, like, now, remember, if they did that, give us a title deed. You cannot come to, like, to clean window. Then you tell people, I'm going to give you housing. I'm going to create employment for you. I'm going to give you a clean water. They will like, this politician who is sent to us is a mad person. You take this way. Because now, in clean window for hours break, you have to start maybe talking about, like, exploration of license.
Yeah.
You have to talk about quotas. You have to talk about PPR. Not like we're going to Havana and then you tell them, hey, we are going to project. Yeah, and the people start clapping because they need those clean water.
Yeah.
They need sanitation. They need, you see, the problem is our government. I cannot blame the private bank. No, it's a government indeed. That, and it is how they are playing a fault. Because the more I think they start using that for campaigning, prevent people from growth and economy recovery. Because I'm telling you, you cannot tell me up to now, you want to tell me that our government is, they're not able to what? To give people a title deed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's what everybody's asking.
Yeah.
Who find himself in Kabasho?
Mm-hmm.
Because the moment you're giving me that chance, my friend, today I'm putting bricks.
Exactly.
Tomorrow, until you find that I have my own structure. The problem which we have is, my friend, you can, even colonial, you can say it was better because a cleaner can able to buy a house.
Our colony was never better.
No.
Colony
no,
was
when it come to housing, maybe it was better because people are, we have a strength which I can tell you that when people who are fought from colonial who said to be just a cleaner or a garden worker.
Was never better, honestly.
It will not be better, but it, yeah. But the other people who went maybe to bread, okay, see, maybe they are waiting, fighting for the white bread.
Mm-hmm.
What is the difference now?
Yeah.
Oh, the difference maybe because of the freedom of speech, which I can talk to you now, but we don't eat that. We don't put it in the table, isn't it? We talk. We can talk about it, but never bring a food to eat. You see? And this is what we have.
Yeah.
And the white bread, you can be able to go to buy white bread. And we can walk up to 24 hours where we, all those kind of things, we can do whatever. But serious when it comes to economical.
Those some of us who have been in apartheid, who have been experienced, you know, pain in apartheid and all that, you know,
I just put it in the way like a context of when it comes to housing.
Yeah.
Because, if you look today, even a teacher is not able to buy a house. Just imagine. Yeah. A teacher, a professional teacher. You talk about a policeman.
Yeah.
You talk about a firefighter. Come on, guys. Now, these are working class.
Mm.
Yeah. Everybody want to, even the kid when you ask him today, what do you want to become? He will tell you, I want to become a policeman. But a policeman, he cannot afford to have to go to what? He's living in Kampasho. What kind of example are you giving?
I was talking earlier on, I said it's less about 10%, 10% of working population holding home loan, you know? So, and when it comes to non-performing mortgage loan, you know, people who have actually fallen behind on their payment, you know, and that stand around 3 billion. That means even people who can actually then be able to have a house, actually have a loan and have a house, they're actually drowning in debt. You understand?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The system is not okay. That's what I'm telling you with her.
Yeah.
When you look at our system, especially when it comes to banks, you talk about even the way of administrating the what housing.
Mm.
It's a problem in Namibia.
Yeah.
Because you cannot tell me I can put up wherever the village where I come from. Then I put up a good house that even costing more than what the house in Wambarokasi or Damarokasi. But that house doesn't have a value.
Yeah.
When it comes to bank, it's not very, doesn't have a value. And that's my problem. Kuchara, no, there's somebody playing with our mind and we're just following.
Yeah.
Because you cannot tell me that I can get one of the people's name.
Yeah.
I actually
see the house that you're talking about. And I was time I passed there, I said, this guy is so dumb.
Yeah.
How can you put such a house like that here? Because it has value zero, you know?
Zero balance, my friend. When it comes to bank. Then now you look at your even that house is more than some of our houses in Komanda.
Yeah.
But serious, there's nothing. That's why I'm saying, guys, it's a hard time to push this government to reorganize our land to become having value. Otherwise, the way we are crying for high unemployment, poverty, it never ends.
Yeah, no.
If we are not doing anything.
I mean, you have to look at the number. As I said, we have to look at the number, and that's very important. And sometimes what annoy me is instead of really looking at the realistic way we can address this, we keep actually doing things that doesn't take us anywhere.
I'm telling you.
You know, we keep doing things that didn't take us anywhere. So, and we keep making promises that are really, when you look at the actual numbers and the actual reality, it doesn't take us anywhere.
Not at all.
So maybe we just need to take out, we kind of like politics is just made to be, don't really believe what I'm saying. you know.
It's more
like the kind of marketing thing. Ah, just understand me that I'm marketing myself. Don't really believe what I'm saying.
It's an advertisement. Now you have to advertise to us so we can believe. No, and the thing is that sometimes I think we have to come up with what? How can I put it down? Mandatory of like, if you come, then you promise us something, there must be a court consequence for you.
Yeah.
Because remember, they promise something, then they never feel anything. Then later, the next election is where you can see they are coming again with another different.
It should be a contract. And actually, it should be a contract.
If
I am a member, you know, if I am a member of PDM, if I am a member of SWAPO, if I am a member of IPC, that's a contract. When we say this is what we're going to do, it's a contract.
Yeah.
And we as the member should be able to actually ask our whoever should be able to implement and said, my dear, you have a contract with us to do this.
Yeah.
You haven't
do it. Now the consequence is here.
Yeah.
You may end up getting arrested. Mm. There must be something, seriously. Otherwise, if we continue this way, nothing will come, really. Because remember one thing, that these people that they are involved in what? In the bank, some of them, they haven't shared the... Some of them, they are in with this property developer. That's why if you go to where they even elect at the Goliath Hub, this was supposed to be poor people housing. And if you go there now, their captains and the major and the union, the people are in defense. But if you are talking about poor people, you're supposed to get securities, you're supposed to have even some cleaners, you name it. Those are poor people we're talking about.
Mm.
But if you are staying nurses and teachers, those are professional people who are able to have a decent house.
Yeah.
Yeah, now they are the ones who are buying those one bedroom and what? guys, man. See, these things that you can see that is not working. But at least, me, I have a fight in what? Minister of Rent and Urban.
Yeah.
I see that he's moving, especially when he comes to city. I think he got a land from the city of Windhoek after they negotiate, because city of Windhoek, oh, government, what, and then now they negotiate. That is a way I think we have to go.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll come up with our data on the terrorists.
It needs a radical change of policies and system. Yeah, it's the only way that is going to change. Yeah,
I just hope that those corrupt people are not going to enter this process of deriving the rent to the people.
All right, man.
Because I'm sure they will come for him.
Yeah.
Anyway, let them end up there, so maybe somebody will come through.
Yeah. So all right.
Okay, sharp.
Away 3336091. We come into you live from the Ondango studio. 08 3336091. We're talking about home crisis, housing crisis, and I said housing crisis is a wage crisis. All right, and also you know colonial pattern that has never changed, and financializations. That's what we're looking at. All right. So as I said, we're just looking at that as well. As I said, the other deep problem is that even the houses that are built under government programs, they are unaffordable. Eh? They are really unaffordable. So service land, as I said, is still actually sold at the price market, at the market price, you know, at market prices. Public-private partnership produces homes that the average Namibians cannot afford. Excuse me. Cannot afford at all. So the government keeps working with the same developers as probably Mantume have said, same developers and banks that have pushed houses prices out of reach for many people. Instead of bringing the real change, you know, it's making small adjustment here and there, but while the housing crisis continues. One economist argued at the seminar, argued that the government should stop chasing home ownership altogether. I think this is a good friend of mine, I know. You know, it's Dr. Omar, I think. I think I read it somewhere. So, that should stop chasing home ownership altogether and instead focus on building decent, affordable rental housing. Affordable rental housing, municipal flat. You know, he said, not individual houses, okay? So, which somehow sometimes makes sense. That makes sense in a way. Think of the many people that comes to Windhoek. As I said, many people that comes to Windhoek are there looking for better opportunities. But most of them are coming from other regions. So if you can have this municipal flat where, you know, people can rent while they're working in Windhoek. And of course, they can build their own houses where they come from. So it's a good idea. Eh? And he also warns against creating a special housing segment for, let's say, for young professionals, arguing that interfering in a liberal market economy actually could backfire. And it as it has with farm land prices. So his point was very clear. It was clear. The National Housing Enterprises has a disappointing track record. It has a disappointing track record. We need a different approach. We need a fundamentally different approach. Yeah. And there are those who go further. They argue that the crisis cannot be solved without dismantling financial capture of housing entirely. We need to dismantle the financial capture of housing. So what are those, what could be the radical proposals? Strong laws to stop people from buying property just to make a profit. There must be some strong laws that can really, stop people buying property just to make profit. Taxes on houses that are left empty, like he was talking about it. He mentioned some houses. More public control over land in towns and cities. Public control. Taking back unused land for public benefit. There are some unused land. Take it for public benefit. Well, we're talking about wages, better wages, yeah, so that workers can afford to live where they work. Yeah? You live in Windhoek and you can't afford living there. You work in Windhoek and you cannot afford living there. All you work for is for your water and electricity and your food. That's it. Yeah? And your transport. That's all. You have nothing on your name. A limit on how much rent can be charged. I think that should be some rent. What is that? Rent board? Something that has been discussed for years. Yeah? Rent controlling board or something, you know? Limit on how much rent can be charged. So just because people knows that, well, it's supply and demand, my friend. There are a lot of people who need accommodation. If you can't afford it, well, get out. Get out. Someone else can come in. Yeah? Housing project owned and managed by communities. Those are now radical proposals that some of these people are saying. So, and more development across the country. You understand? So because you have people actually moving to town, it's because there is no development across the country so that people do not have to move to Windhoek, do not have to move to Wavish Bay. Eh? Simply to find opportunity and make a living. So if you have that development across the country, that would limit people moving to these major cities. Some of these, of course, a really, really radical proposal. Yeah. But when 70% of your population cannot afford a home, maybe radical is exactly what we need. Radical is what we need. So the question is, really, is the government doing enough? Or are we just making the crisis instead of solving it? Are we just managing? Are we just managing the crisis instead of solving it? Or 0833-66091 or 0833-66091. So come through. Let us know.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, just to round up this segment, Namibia housing, you know, housing crisis is not an accident. It's not an accident. It's not a temporary market glitch, you know. This is not just a temporary market glitch. It is the predictable outcome of a system built on a colonial land theft, you know, built on a colonial land theft, financial exploitation, you know, of ordinary people, and a wage regime that keeps the working class poor. Those are my argument. Houses have gone from 200,000 to 1.4 million in 25 years, while 300,000 workers earn less than 5,000 a month. Now, you can figure that out yourself. So some of the point we talked about. The bank hold 45 billion in home loan for less than 10% of the population, while 3 billion in mortgage debt goes bad. What does that say? So the government's housing plan addresses less than 20% of the backlog. The plan that we have, it only addresses less than 20% of the backlog. As I said, it's like, you know, you're trying to put off a forest fire with a bucket of water. Now, maybe this is something, okay, these are the key takeaway from this. Now, so this is a structural crisis, not a market failure, as I said at the beginning. The system is working as it designed. It's working as it designed. It's not just, it is not designed for the majority. It was not just designed for the majority, but it's working as it designed. Number two, the wage crisis and the housing crisis are the same crisis. No housing policy can succeed without economic justice, a living wage tied to actually cost of urban life.
Imbaya rire ombwa nai etetawe da ko mbuni kire ombe ombi hukusha njiviro yoye irire ombupu o hatane na wina ikare na masa kumurungu wa indu weri rongere kusha umune ondengu ukura kwe imba una ovi umedia peke kwa gondola mirongo vitatu na hambu umwe mumwe stoo kika ovi inki nukukara norupa ondando ya peke yukia nja oshimariva owa peresente dano kumyeve vitatu moshimariva owa peresente umurongo kumyeve hambu umwe moshimariva owa peresente umirongo ivari na dano Komiyeve mulongwa na bivari moshimarifu. Itororera ondengu, jima yu ungura na wakove na wina onyanukife. Ashiesho imba ye kupe oshimariva shishihina omarifiro. Imba o maoronga neno uyebu haka enina, itako na wina rishangitha jinon.
My friend, why do you see?
All right, welcome back. Our time is about 30 minutes past the hour of 9. And around 10 o'clock, we will be handing over to Tate Naluvanda. So I see him hanging around, so he's probably around. All right. So, yeah. So I was saying that, you know, just take some few takes away, key takes away from what we have discussed so far. So the wage crisis and the housing crisis are the same crisis. You know, as I said, no housing policy can succeed without economic justice. and a living wage, which is actually tied to the actual cost of our urban life, you know? Because otherwise you never survive. So the colonial land pattern were never dismantled. The colonial land pattern were never dismantled. And until they are, the majority will remain. We will remain locked out. We'll definitely remain locked out. So, and there are small adjustment policies. The small adjustment policies are not enough. We need transformative action, whether that means public housing, land reform, anti-speculation speculation law, or all of the above. Okay?
A very good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
Bon dia, familia.
Bon dia. Como está?
Bom, obrigado.
Tudo bem.
Okay.
It's housing issues, man. This is your. I was actually wondering about, about you, you know.
When you started, I was a bit busy and I was trying to finish my things which I was doing to run quickly so I can catch up with you. But I'm not done. I just come back to say something in this issue of the house.
Yeah.
You mentioned, you know, you say like, even though you have like your salary is 5,000, you don't qualify to buy a house.
Yeah.
Now there's a question mark there to say now, what about those cannot the domestic workers? What about those benefit, you know, I'm a Namibian, but I don't work. How now the system can cater for me to be part of this system?
Exactly.
All meaning like if I don't have a job, I won't have a house in Namibia, I'll live renting until I die.
You might not have a job but you have children. Where are you housing them?
Come again, I can't hear you well.
No, I said, Emma, can you hear me now? Yeah.
Yes, like you are down in the water.
I'm far. Am I far?
Yeah, plus my but yeah. No, okay. I
was saying, you know, the point that you're making is that, you know, I'm not working, but I have children. Where am I housing them exactly? Yeah.
Yes. Mm. You know, there's a problem. Now there was this willing buyer, willing seller. Who's benefiting from that system up to date? You know, and people still really stress when you speak about house. I sometimes don't understand. I want to understand this problem. You know, I'm in Namibian. I don't have a job, but how the government can make me to have a house?
Mm.
You know, now you find some locations. When they go there, there's these zinc houses. You know, when they go there, they'll tell you sometimes they're overcrowded. Who's the problem? Is you, because you take longer to develop these locations,
yeah.
And by doing so, you are creating criminals because the people are going to the darkness.
Yeah.
You know, the darkness and what they have. So even though, if you even develop, you know, we don't have all of us work for the government. No. The government just need to come to people and put houses, build schools, give a better condition. Mm-hmm. We know how to fix ourselves already.
Yeah. The other thing I was saying is that, you know, there must be strong law to stop people from buying property just to make profit, you know?
Yes.
Yeah, because now it's only those who have money that actually can buy, you know, a property. I mean, you can buy land, you know, take back. And the other thing is also taking back unused land for public benefit, for people who may not be afford to, you know, to build a house, you know?
You know that, American, even though this the energy scheme, this system of energy, whatever.
Yeah.
Even though that then help for somebody that doesn't have a job. And you know, sometimes the government go there and say, oh, we are happy, affordable house. For who? Who gonna live there? I don't have a job.
I can tell you, even teachers and police are not even affording energy houses.
Eh? It's painful, really. This issue of the house, they need to sit and think about how you can, I mean, Namibian, how can you cater for me? because you know the value you give me when we going to elect, give me the same value. Give me the same value even though I don't have a job. Because I'm also part of this system.
Yeah.
You know, really it's painful when people speak about houses. And as people look, even up today, they are living in the shacks for many years.
Yeah.
Many years. They are getting older in the shacks. The kids are, this person get older and go to the north and leave the kids. That's what we have in these locations. People are really in crisis of this. I don't know which system we are following. And people are very quiet. No, no, really. People should wake up and say, how can you cater for a Namibian person? No? You live in the country like a foreigner. Mm. You don't own anything. Even water, don't have.
No, that's not a joke. It is true. It's not just you don't have water. It's just because it's also a very scarce commodity within our community. Yeah.
Now your kids, huh? Sometimes people, you know, you get these lines to put to the sheikhs to get light. And it's a problem again. You get fined from the municipality.
Hmm.
Who you're supposed to get fined here? It's the municipality, because you are putting me in them. You know, you are discriminating whatever in the this kind of system. You don't value me. You only value me in this election.
Yeah, we're saying. The apartheid, not just apartheid, the colonial, you know, land patterns hasn't been dismantled. It has never been dismantled. Yeah. So it's still actually the same system that has been designed, and exactly is doing what it's supposed to do.
Mm? I'm just wondering. We are so few, man. We are so few, but when it comes to house, a system, people are really, they don't even talk about it like it's normal. It's not normal, man. It's not normal.
You are right. You know that the whole population of Namibia can live in Windhoek.
Yes.
It's a land enough in Windhoek for everybody in Namibia to live in Windhoek. Yeah?
Yes, we have enough land, we have enough space for us to have houses, but we are just putting in the corner. You'll be there suffering 6 years, 7 years, 10 years, 20 years, you get older, you die, you leave your kids in the same poverty, and then your souls continue. You come on, until when?
Yeah.
Huh? Until when you're going to live like this? If you go to the sheikhs today, when come to winter, you're in trouble. It's this thing is cold, man. Okay, just have a go where you find more problems, where this undeveloped areas, locations, where you all find problems, where people are doing a lot. People are not, you know, they don't need the system to support themselves. They are not the system.
Exactly, yeah.
The issue of the house, I see even now it's better because maybe the leadership of Menetumbo, things are getting better, going in the good direction, but they need to do more, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, man. Thanks for coming, Trier.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, yeah. 08333 66091. Yeah. So sometimes it's as we say, you know, if you listen to the argument, you know, we're talking of, there are issues like wage issues. Sometimes of wage issues are not depending on the government. That means there is a gap from where we are and how far the house prices have gone, you know? So, and that's why I'm bringing in those issues for us to understand that there's a lot of, there's a lot of that need to be done. As I said, it's exactly what I'm saying, that there's no housing policy can succeed. A government can come up with a housing policy without economic justice. Without economic justice, without also economic justice, and without a living wage tied to the actual cost of where you're living. And I was talking about, we talked about the colonial pattern. So the colonial land patterns were never dismantled. And until they are, the majority
I think many of us will remain locked out of housing. So, yeah, as I said, we see adjustment policy, we see some small adjustment policies, but they are not enough. Yeah? They are not enough. We need a transformative action. Yeah? We need a transformative action, whether that means public housing, land reform, which is still an issue. Land reform still, you know, is still an issue. Anti-speculation laws, as I said, everything. The thing is, Yene, Namibia does not have housing shortage. We don't have a housing shortage. We have a shortage of justice, redistribution, and political will. That's the shortage we have. And those are not my words. Those are not my words. Those are the words of researchers who have studied this crisis from the inside. And they are right. Eh? So they are right. So when 7 out of 10 Namibians cannot afford a home in their own country, what kind of society are we building? Same thing that the caller was asking. Then more importantly, what are we prepared to do about it? What are we prepared to do about it? It doesn't matter where you are now. Eh? Wherever you are, whether you are a parliamentarian, you are a minister, you whatever, whether you are just a simple citizen, what are you prepared to do? Eh? So maybe I'm doing my part. I'm trying to give you this information, you know, and open up certain things maybe that you are not aware before. So what are you prepared to do? Otherwise, you doing nothing is also doing something, my friend. Nothing moves. You stay where we are. We stay where we even regressing. All right. 0833-66091 is the time. I mean, it's the number you can, you know, you can get to me if you want to react to, you know, to the story, react to what we have covered so far. So otherwise, when we come back, we get into our second story. So, all right. 0833-66091.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, our time is about 44 minutes past the hour of 9. And welcome back to Unpacking the Day. In this segment, okay, we are going to look at a story that that could actually reshape the economic map of Southern Africa for generations to come, hopefully. $4 billion, US dollars, that is the price tag. An oil refinery, jointly owned by Namibia and Botswana, and that's what has been making headline recently. So what is exactly on the table? What is exactly on the table? Namibia and Botswana have signed an agreement to jointly develop a $4 billion oil refinery, a $4 billion US dollar oil refinery. So that's action right there, okay? So, now, this is not about, okay, we're talking about oil refinery. We're not talking about, this is not a pipeline or a storage depot or a refinery, my friend. We're talking about a refinery. The industrial facility that takes raw crude oil. That takes raw crude oil and turns into the petrol you pump into your car, you know, diesel that power our mines, for example, yeah? And the jet fuel that keep Hosea Kotako, you know, running. So that's what we're talking about, the industrial facility that can do that. So, and that is the scale of the ambition. That's the scale of ambition we are talking about. Okay? So, now the partnership was sealed. I think it was sealed actually in a diplomatic meeting in Gaborone between President Tumbonane Daitwa and President Duma Boko. Last year, when actually our president had her first visit as a president to Botswana, so both leaders framed it now as more than infrastructure. So they call it a practical step towards a regional integration that would create jobs, and also the main thing is that breaking free from commodity dependency. Okay? So, and that was a joint statement emphasized the urgent need for projects that deliver really employment and inclusive growth. So, yeah, it has been coming. This agreement has been coming. And those are very strong words. Those are really strong words. But word on paper, do not refine oil. Word on paper, then they don't refine oil. But let's look at what is really driving this. Okay? What is driving it? What is driving this, this project? There are factors that are actually driving this project. So one is actually a diamond decline. That's one of the problems. So we have both Namibia and Botswana have built, these two countries have built their modern economy on diamond. Debswana, you know Debswana and in Botswana, and we have Deb Marines in Namibia here at home. So for many years, diamond paid the bills for the government. Paid the bills, paid the schools, paid the clinic, funded the, you know, yeah, the social programs of the government. So, but I think, you know, recently, the ground is shifting under our feet. The ground is shifting really under our feet. The Debtswana cut production by 6 million carats in 2024. Well, Deb Marine, Namibia, recorded a 13% drop that same year and projected another 5% decline in 2025. So why? Because the global demand for natural diamond is falling. So lab-grown diamond, as we many times spoken about here, so the lab-grown diamond are flooding the market at a very fraction of the price, at a really small fraction of the price compared to natural diamond. Now, consumer now, tastes are changing. So the consumers, their tastes are changing, and suddenly the foundation that both economies were built on is actually cracking. So, which is diamond, it's actually cracking. So, and this is not, this is not some kind of a distant problem. Eh? Either something that's going to happen in the future or something that we're, you know, this is happening now. Eh? It's happening now. And we have even, Deb Marines have, what is this, volunteer, some employees were encouraged to to have this voluntary package. I don't know how it was reframed. Voluntary something, you know, where you just go voluntarily and get a package. So this is what is happening now. When diamond revenues contract, you know, when it decline, so you understand that government budget also shrink. Yeah? They shrink. So social program get cut, a development project come to a standstill. So that's very, 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 very important. So both countries now are actually staring at the same reality. Yeah, they are staring at the same reality. And of course, they must now do our favorite words. you know, our favorite word, they must diversify. They must diversify, and they must do, and they must do it fast. They must do it fast. Energy, and energy is the, is actually the new front, it's actually the new frontier. So the energy is the new frontier. So Namibia has discovered a massive, for us, Namibia, we have discovered a massive oil, offshore oil reserve in the Orange Basin. So international giant like Total Energies and Shell are already exploring our Atlantic coast. So estimates suggest Namibia could become one of Africa's major oil producers in the coming years. Now, if you look at the number, now you can also understand why this is a very, very, very something that this two are looking for. In 2023, let's just take 2023, Namibia spent $1.52 billion importing refined petroleum. From where? India, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, you know, countries that are, you know, that are 1,000 kilometers away. Botswana spent another $1.8 billion, mostly buying from South Africa. And ironically, from us as well, you know? So no wonder why they feel that we have to do this together. So between the two of us, we are sending close to $2.5 billion out of our region every single year, just to fuel our taxis, our trucks, our planes, our generators, you know? But the critical question is, will we simply export crude and stay in the same trap? Or will we refine it here and keep the value at home? So, now let's give credit where it's due. Let's give credit where it's due. If this refinery works, okay, if it works, and it's a big if it works, that's a potential, is a potential, the potential is massive. And it's always potential in Africa. The potential is massive. We are talking about thousands of construction jobs, talking about engineers, welders, electricians, you know, truck drivers, and then hundred more permanent position once the plant is operational. And it does not stop there. It does not stop at the refinery gate. You know, it doesn't stop there. Large industrial projects create ripple effect, as you know. You know, petrochemical industry may come into existence, plastic manufacturing, you know, storage and logistic hubs. So export infrastructure. So a whole supply chain could actually emerge around, you know, this single facility. All right. Let's go to the caller. Good morning. Welcome to Unpacking the Day.
I'm in this. Do I have five?
No, I need to finish this, man. Yeah, quickly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Then there is the energy security. I think that's something that we also need to think about. There's energy security. Right now, if a shipping lane is disrupted, if a supply hikes prices, you know, if a global crisis hits, Namibia and Botswana are at the mercy of distant markets. As we say, Namibia, where do we get our refined, you know, fuel? So we are at the mercy of distant market. So the regional refinery means, the regional refinery means we control more of our supply, of our own supply. So, and that matters really. It does matter. So it makes more, it matters for business that need reliable diesels. So it matters for hospital, for example, that need backup generators. Just give an example. So it matters for every Namibian who has watched fuel prices. If you have a car, at the pump, you know, because of, and that's also because of just an event that is happening somewhere overseas, you know, or ocean away. So it really matters. And of course, there is also the geopolitical angle. The African Continental Free Trade Area is pushing. They are pushing for stronger intra-Africa trade and industrial corporations. So there's also that angle where there is that push. So this refinery is being hailed, you know, when you listen, it's being hailed as a practical example of Pan-Africanism in action. But it's just an agreement, all right? So yeah, and it's being hailed as a Pan-Africanism in action, not those rhetoric kind from summit speeches, but the concrete. This is the more like the concrete kind. Two countries pooling resources, sharing ownership, you know, building something neither could build alone, you know. So, and if it works, as I said, if it works, it becomes a model for the continent. If it works, it becomes the model for the continent. But here's the real question. Here's the real question for you. Now, when was the last time a $4 billion project on this continent delivered everything it promises? Eh? When was that? So, for me, there are a number of questions, you know, unanswered about this agreement. About this agreement. No, not disagreement. About this agreement. And I'm just throwing them for us now to discuss, for you to discuss. Because we don't have time now to go to discuss that. Now, question number one for me, now when you listen to what has been discussed, you only see what is actually in the papers. So then you're asking, there was nothing that says where the $4 billion will come from. So where is the $4 billion come from? Neither Botswana, nor Namibia, you know, has that kind of cash lying around. Yeah? We don't have that cash lying around. So who finance it? Yeah? Who finance it? The Chinese? The Gulf State? Could maybe the Gulf State who finance, or Western consortiums? Yeah? And what do they want in return? That's always the question. What do they want in return? Because, my friend, nobody, and I mean nobody, lends you $4 billion, follow US billion dollars or out of love. Nobody. So these are strings. There are strings. Yeah? So there's always strings attached. And there's always strings. So that's one of my questions. So where is this $4 billion coming from? Now, my question number two, because these are not things that are clear. Maybe these are things that still have to come later. So where will this refinery actually be built? Wavish Bay, Lüderitz, or somewhere in Botswana? Because this is matter. It does matter because wherever it lands, you know, that town becomes the economic capital of the project. It becomes the economic capital of the project. There will be jobs. There will be contract housing booms that we are talking about here, you know, real estate. So all flow to that location. And we have not had, you know, a clear answer yet. So where will this refinery actually be built? And because that matters, as I said. Yeah. And question number three, who owns what now between Namibia and Botswana? The joint statements say a shared ownership. But what does that mean in practice? What does that mean? It is 50-50? Okay. Does one country contribute more capital and therefore hold a large stake? Yeah? How are our profit distributed? Now you have to think now in terms of business, you have now to think in terms, how will the profit be distributed? How are the losses absorbed? Yeah? Ownership structures on cross-border mega project have historically, not only, I'm not talking now in Namibia and Botswana, have been really, this has been a fertile ground for dispute in some countries. So clarity now would prevent those conflict later. So I think that's we need to understand right from the very beginning. Yeah? Those clarity for us as well. We don't want to end up at war yeah? with Botswana. So this need to be clarified. Question number five. Oh no, number four. One thing we cannot rule out in this conversation is a global energy transition. Are we building a dinosaur? Are we building a dinosaur? The world is moving away from fossil fuel. Europe wants electric cars by 2035. So China is leading the world in solar panels. So we are about to spend $4 billion on an oil refinery that may be obsolete in 25 years. Is this vision? Or is this yesterday's solution to tomorrow's, you know, problem? So I'm just throwing this question for you while I'm waiting for Mr. Nalovanda to come through. So maybe my number five question, what about timelines also? Because we have seen this in Africa. We have seen it before across Africa. Grand announcement, ribbon cuttings, you know, and then delays. Delays, financing gaps. That's what you will hear at some point, financing gap, regulatory bottleneck, especially when it comes to two countries together. The refinery that was supposed to be operational in 5 years takes 15. I remember something is it Uganda? Something similar in Uganda that has taken so long. I can't remember exactly. Let me not get into that. So, but then, you know, this is now, there's issues where now a refinery that was supposed now to be operational in a few years, it taken some decades, you know. And Namibia we have been here before with other mega projects. You know, we need realistic public accountability milestones, not political timelines. Normally those political times are tied to election cycles. Yeah. These guys are not stupid, you know. Yeah, are tied to election cycles. So after 5 years, that's where you hear again the whole refinery issues. So, yeah. And, maybe question number six. And this is also another serious one. We can get excited about refineries, but what about the environment? And I'm asking that depending what do we have actually expert in dealing with this kind of refinery are not gentle creatures. Let me put it for you. They are not gentle creatures. They pollute. Yeah? They pollute. They consume massive amount of water. Yeah? They consume massive amount of water. In Namibia, let's be honest with ourselves. And those are the things I can tell you. They will tell you, oh, this, that, the agreement, but they're not talking about those kind of things. We are one of the driest country on earth. So where will the water come from? Yeah? Where will be the water coming from? It's all, as I said, it's all we can celebrate. Oh, there's an agreement in terms of this. And where would the water be coming from? What happened to the emission? Yeah? Who monitors it? So we still have to hear all this, all right? So we still have to hear all that. All right. So let me leave you there. Let me leave you and welcome Mr. Nalovanda.